Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
You're watching Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Earlier this morning, Myanmar's military announced a state of emergency for 1 year, with all legislative, executive and judicial powers transferred to top army commander General Min Aung Hlaing. Myanmar's parliament was supposed to convene today, ushering in the incumbent National League for Democracy into its second term. So the general elections back in November saw a landslide win for the NLD, but also significant losses for the military-backed Union Solidarity and Development Party, or USDP. Now, while election authorities and international observers agreed that the elections were free and fair, the army and some ethnic minority parties have claimed fraud. But is this sufficient justification for the coup? Over the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to be looking at the implications of the military coup on human rights and democracy, and it's the well-being of its citizens in Myanmar. So joining us first on the show, we have Charles Santiago. He's the chair of the ASEAN Parliamentarians for Human Rights. Good evening, Charles. Thanks so much for joining us on the show. So ASEAN Parliamentarians for Human Rights, they've called for a restoration of democracy and for the military to return to their barracks. Now, the Myanmar military command has said that the country's constitution actually allows for them to intervene. Is this claimed legality of the coup sufficient to justify it, Charles?
Thanks, Melissa and Sharad, for having me for the next couple of minutes. I think, as a background, the 2008 constitution was not a democratically drafted or adopted constitution. It was designed by the military for the military. So they're trying to give legitimacy to the unjustifiable. Let's be clear, what they're doing here is an illegal power grab from a democratically elected government.
Charles, I mean, the claims of fraud, and I understand, you know, within your grouping, the ASEAN Parliamentarians for Human Rights, is this something that you look at? I mean, the issue of whether an election brought to power in a sufficiently free and fair manner, is that something that concerned you about the November elections?
I think in general, the UN, including other observers, polls observers, essentially said that it was a free and fair election. But I think since November last year, when the NLD won 396 of the 476 seats, which is a landslide victory of sorts, I think that brought fear to the government, to the army, in terms of their vulnerability and their role in the future of Myanmar. And I think come January, they learned something from Trump, where Trump accused Biden of stealing the elections. So I think that gave them a bit of legitimacy to say, hey, these NLD guys were actually, they stole the election. Now, there's no basis for this at all. There's absolutely no basis at all. And therefore, I think this is quite clear that the Myanmar military is essentially has power grab, an illegal power grab against a democratically elected government. In fact, this government won 396 of the 476 seats, which is quite significant.
Right. Charles, ASEAN has issued a statement, and they've referred to the ASEAN Charter's principles of democracy, also the pursuance of dialogue and reconciliation and the return to normalcy. Now, I'm wondering whether you expect this to have any material effect on how the military junta negotiates this coup they seem to have engineered.
I think Myanmar in general really has no time for ASEAN. And because they know that ASEAN needs the ASEAN businessmen and the ASEAN countries need Myanmar's resources. So they're quite okay with pussyfooting with ASEAN. But I think what is interesting about ASEAN's statement is this push for reconciliation and normalcy in accordance with the will and the interests of the people of Myanmar. This is quite interesting, though, the will and the interests of the people of Myanmar. Of course, it's all subject to interpretation. But what is the will and the interests of the people of Myanmar? It is to get NLD to run the government, to manage the government, because they were the duly elected, duly democratically elected government. So I think it all depends on what you read into ASEAN. Of course, what I would have liked to have seen is a much more stronger language coming from ASEAN. But I think the stronger language came from Indonesia, though, where they actually pushed Myanmar to say, hey, we signed on to the principles of the ASEAN Charter. There's a need for rule of law, a good governance, and ASEAN and Myanmar has to follow the principle of democracy and a constitutional government. So I think, of course, there are differences within ASEAN itself, but you can see that normally ASEAN would simply say, please keep talking to each other, have the dialogue going on. But now they've gone one step further, and I think I'm reading to the extreme, where they said, go back to the will and the interest of the people of Myanmar, which means give it back to the people, the democratically elected government of Myanmar.
Charles, it's interesting that you say that Indonesia had maybe framed it in stronger terms. Seeing how Indonesia itself had ushered itself out of military control of the democratic process, with Dewi Fungsi, and it successfully negotiated a transition to genuine democracy. What do you think has gone wrong in Myanmar? Why is it that the military seems unable to step back from, politics? Is it because they failed to get their party elected in significant numbers? That if they had been more successful, that perhaps this might not have happened?
I think this is a very complex question, but I think among the answer to this complex question. Is the role of the commander-in-chief, the new commander-in-chief, Min Aung Hlaing. I think that's how his name is pronounced. And this guy is quite an interesting character, though, because he was he's actually wanted by the United Nations for genocide against the Rohingya. My only fear is now he's the commander, and he will now complete the job that he set out to do, not only in Rakhine State, but also in Kachin State, in Chin State, where there's other ethnic states in Myanmar, where they're having this conflict with the military. So this 1 year will give them a huge space in order to wipe out all of these guys. And of course, they've also said, I think later this evening, that they will have an elections in the next year. I think this is quite telling, because what they might actually do is that they might actually ban the NLD, which is what happened in Cambodia. So they might learn something from Cambodia. Or they might actually ban Aung San Suu Kyi from competing in the next election. But that will be fraudulent. That will be fraudulent, because you have a legitimately elected government that is already there, that's already governing. And now you have a backdoor government through a coup d'etat. Therefore, I think, yeah.
Yeah, Charles, sorry to interrupt you. We have a minute or so left, and I'm just wondering, when news surfaced of this military coup in Myanmar, there was a lot of talk about, Malaysia's also in a state of emergency. Do you see parallels between the two countries?
Well, clearly, this is not only true for Malaysia, but it's also true largely for a lot of countries in Southeast Asia, where backdoor governments are now running the government, where the constitutionally elected government are no longer in place, and they have been replaced in Malaysia, in Myanmar, in Cambodia, and also in Thailand as well. So you see this practice, that is something that we did not see for so many years, but it's becoming common in Southeast Asia. So there are lots of similarities to you.
Charles, thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight. We really do appreciate your time and you sharing your insights. Thank you.
Thanks.
We're going to take a quick break. More on Consider This in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned.